Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today, and as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, and today we're going to talk about Upset Saturday. There were plenty of upsets this weekend, and we'll talk about them all. Chavez Jr. leaves training camp. We'll have the story here. Adrian Broner and Floyd Mayweather at odds. Big brother and little brother at odds. Our history lesson this week goes over a historic fight of Roy Jones Jr. versus John Ruiz for the heavyweight championship. But first, we're going to start with Jesse Vargas shocks the world. Well, maybe not the world, but he shocked me.
Yeah, he shocked me too.
Jesse Vargas.
I gave him absolutely no chance in this fight.
None. Yeah, I thought Saddam was just going to run right over this guy, man. Jesse Vargas scored an impressive ninth round TKO over previously unbeaten Saddam Ali to win the vacant WBO welterweight championship of the world. Vargas dropped him in the eighth round with an overhand right, and Ali was still reeling from it in round nine, and Vargas just battered him to the deck again. The bout was waved off right around 2:09 of the ninth round. Let me tell you, I thought the pressure told a story in this fight. Vargas just put a lot of pressure on Ali, and Ali just looked like he didn't handle it very well. I don't want to say the pressure broke him, but, he didn't handle it very well, put it that way.
Well, Eric, it sure looked that way.
Yeah, it didn't look good for him. I mean, it didn't look good for him at all, man. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I was shocked with the way this fight went. He didn't look good the entire night.
No.
There was nothing that, I mean, Jesse Vargas kept coming forward. He looked like he had no idea on how to deal with that.
No, and you know, now I'm wondering, because I've never really given Jesse Vargas any kind of credit at all. I thought he's been given tons of gift decisions, and because he's always made all of his fights close. I wonder if now we have to look at him differently because of the way he handled Ali, or is it a case that Ali wasn't experienced enough and wasn't ready for this kind of fighter?
I watched a short documentary. I think Vice did a documentary on Jesse Vargas prior to his fight with Tim Bradley. And he really kind of got a whole new respect for him, man, because he went over his diet and he went over his training regimens and stuff like that and just how much he actually puts into this and how much his family is vested in this and how much he's invested in this. I mean, he's in it, and which obviously he's going to be. He's a pro. You know,
yeah.
But he goes the extra mile. He's not messing around, man. He's a fighter, man. That's for sure. No question.
Yeah, but he's always been in close fights. He's always been given razor thin decisions when it looks like he should have lost. But now, you know, I mean, he's not known as a knockout person, and he just thoroughly dominated Ali like Ali didn't even belong in the ring, kind of. I wonder if we have to look at Jesse under a new light, and I wonder if he's ready for, you know, big-time fights.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, he's a champ now, so, he's
and this
ready
is
for
the
big-time
second,
fights.
This is the second time in a second different weight class, so, you know.
Yeah, he's doing something right, man, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What about Saddam Ali? I mean, where does he go from here? Because he looked absolutely miserable in this fight.
I think Ali has been kept out of the ring too long because so many people wanted to avoid him. They didn't want to fight him, and I think it hurt him. Remember, he's still just a young kid, and you still, when they're up and coming and young and they're looking impressive, you got to keep them. You got to keep a kid like that more active, and I think in his case, a lack of activity here hurt. Golden Boy's promoter, they need to put him on more shows. They need to keep him busy because I think the lack of activity here caught him because he hadn't been in the ring since last April.
Was it
so
that long?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, because people kept saying no to his fights. So, he'd been out of the ring for, you know, almost, 10 months or so. And a kid like that, you've got to have him fighting, I would say, every 3 months at least.
Do you see a scenario where he beats Jesse Vargas?
I think if Ali was more active and had more fights under his belt, I think he would have gave a better showing, because like with Anton Douglas, which we'll talk about later, he was basically unprepared for what he was going to deal with.
I don't really understand that, though, because, you've seen tape on Jesse Vargas, you know what he does. He's a pressure fighter. What surprised him?
I think as far as Ali is concerned, I think there needs to be a whole new. They have to push the reset button on his career. They've got to change the entire team around him. They've got to get him a new trainer. Golden Boy has to take a better look at how they're promoting this guy, because I couldn't believe how unprepared he was for what Jesse was giving him on Saturday night. It blew me away. I did not expect Ali to look like that, and I think they've got to hit the reset button and start all over and clean house and start building him back up again, because after this performance, I don't know how many people are going to want to get in the ring with him, or how many people would accept getting in the ring with him, because he looked bad.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and a guy with Ali's style should have been able to dominate Vargas. I mean, without question, should have been able to dominate Vargas. I mean, he's coming forward, and Ali is like a mover. He's a, he sticks moves, everything like that, and more of a boxer. I'm just stunned. I'm just stunned by that, by his performance and by or lack thereof. I mean, it was bad.
And, the problem with Jesse is one of these trainer hoppers. He always changes trainers. And a kid like that, I call him the kid because he's only 28 years old.
Yeah.
A fighter like that, you can't do that. Vargas, it looks like he's finally stabilized. Because Jesse constantly changes trainers, and it looks like he's finally got somebody that can bring out the best in him. But for Ali, I think he needs to go back and work with Roger Mayweather, because that was the best Jesse Vargas. I mean, the best. I'm getting confused here. I think Ali needs somebody like a Roger Mayweather, or somebody like that that works with boxers. He needs a boxer style type of trainer. He doesn't need a trainer that's going to, have him produce knockouts. Ali is the boxer kind. So maybe if you get a Roger Mayweather or Floyd Mayweather Sr., somebody like that who knows how to teach defense and boxing. Yes, boxing fans, that's kind of boring for most of you, but this is what this guy needs to do.
The problem is, and I hope Ali doesn't fall into this category. You see it over and over, though. You see a young undefeated prospect coming up, didn't lose much in the amateurs, doesn't lose at all in the pros, goes for his first world title, and then boom. I mean, to get to lose a decision is one thing, to get knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
When you haven't been knocked out, you haven't been tested, you haven't been. I mean, just to get knocked out,
yeah,
that's a tough thing to deal with. That's a tough thing to come back from.
Yeah. No, that's why I think the people at Golden Boy, Oscar, Bernard, and those around that office need to hit the reset button and get him better advisors.
I don't know what's going on with Golden Boy, but it seems like we've been talking about them for the past couple of weeks. We talk about Diego De La Hoya not getting any screen time. Now we're talking about Saddam Ali, being on the shelf for so long. It shouldn't take this long to get fights. It shouldn't.
No.
Even if it's just tune-up type fights or something, I mean,
you got to keep the kid busy. And
right.
Let's face it, Ali's still a kid. I don't care if you put him on some of these ring TV shows. Keep him active, because he didn't. He looked like on Saturday night he did not deserve to be in a title fight. He wasn't ready for it.
No, and that pressure, I mean, and, you know, he's, you know, Sanam Ali, you know, he's been in the Olympics. He's seen every kind of style you can possibly see. He's, you know, he's seen pressure fighters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They alluded to that. They alluded to that on the telecast, talking about, well, Saddam is from Brooklyn, you know, or New York area. And so on the East Coast, they don't have, like, the Mexicans, you know, like they do in California. When the Mexican fighters, they come straight at you.
That's
you know,
right.
And they put a lot of pressure on you. They don't have that
in New York. And that's what Vargas is.
Right. But they don't, to tell me that, you know, he didn't have that in training, or they can't get that in New York, or they don't have pressure fighters in New York. Get out of here. Come on.
I don't buy that either, because, come on, there are all kinds of gyms in New York City. Look at how many fighters are from there, for God's sake.
Right. You know. And you can't find a pressure fighter anywhere in New York.
Tell me another one, guys. But no, Vargas, we have to look at him under a new light, give him more respect. Ollie, he needs to start all over, man. You know, that's all I can say about that fight.
Absolutely. And I was looking at him like the cream of the division, man. I mean, that's what shocked me. I mean, and I've said it for a long time, man, that he was like the, you know, going to be the, him and Errol Spence were going to be like the cream of the divisions, you know, their respective divisions, you know. And
actually, they're in the same weight class.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you thought those guys were going to be like the cream of the crop right there. And then to watch this and to watch it happen the way it happened, it's like, wow. I mean, that was pretty bad.
No, I think some reevaluating needs to be done here, and you've got to keep this fighter more active. I mean, it's inexcusable. The last time he fought was April 25th, 2015, and you wait till March 5th, 2016 to get him another fight. That is inexcusable.
Right.
Inexcusable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, too much time, and he's your star. He's one of your stars there. He was one of your stars there.
Won't be for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, you have Canelo, and then you have everybody else over at Golden Boy, and that's the problem. They stick on, you know, it's you need to promote your stars, but you also got to promote those undercards too. You know, the up-and-comers, because they're going to be your stars tomorrow, you know.
Well, I know Oscar's real big on this internet streaming thing. He's going to have two internet streaming services where he's going to put fights because he feels like he doesn't need a major TV deal because Al Haymon took the Fox thing away from him. Oscar, you better reevaluate how you're doing that because you've got to give your guys TV time, you know. It's wonderful to put your fights on the internet for you know, the international people that doesn't get to see the fights here in the U.S., but come on, you're in America. Make a deal with a TV network. Al can't buy them all. You know, I'm sure there's somebody that will give you some kind of time if you're interested in actually buying it. I mean, look, if Al can buy time, so can you. Get with it, buddy, because you've got people there that need to be seen on TV, not on the internet.
And not to mention, just backtracking here for a minute, Golden Boy is located in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, it's located in L.A. Oscar De La Hoya, Mexican. Canelo Alvarez, Mexican. You can't tell me they can't get Mexican sparring if that's what they were concerned with.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody in New York, to New York, or bring him out there. I mean, that wasn't the issue at all. You can't tell me that he's never seen a pressure fighter. That was the dumbest comment I think I had heard.
You know, what can I say? That I was very disappointed. Not only was I wrong, but I was proven to be so wrong about a kid that I thought had a bright future, and he still might. But you have to do it. You have to do it correctly. My God.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's going to be real tough, man. There's like a handful of people you see coming out of a loss. Bernard Hopkins was one when he was coming up out of a loss. When he lost to Roy Jones, he was an up-and-comer, undefeated when he lost to Roy Jones.
Right,
and then, of course, made a career after that, you know.
Yeah.
Saddam Ali, it's going to be tough, but, you know, at the same time, he wasn't KO'd, you know.
Yeah.
So that's, it's, I'm not saying it's impossible, I'm saying it's a real uphill climb, so.
Yeah, no, Golden Boy, you didn't invest the proper money into this fighter. You didn't give him the kind of activity that he deserves. And if he has any management team in his corner whatsoever, I would even think about, as soon as my contract expires, with Golden Boy going somewhere else, because you have to have fights. This is just totally inexcusable. And I don't blame the fighter, because the fighter in his case only takes the fights that he's offered. He hasn't built up the stature to say, yeah, I want that fight, or no, I don't. This is on the promoter here.
Well, and, you know, the intriguing part about Saddam Ali and this whole thing is that he re-upped about a year ago with Golden Boy. That's why, yeah. You know, that was one of the questions I had for him when he was on the show, is that, yeah. You know, why didn't you go with Heyman? Why did you stay with Golden Boy? And he just said he was loyal. You know, he was loyal to Golden Boy.
Okay, and, well, what is your loyalty got you today?
Right.
That's my question.
Right. So, yeah. So let's move on. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say congratulations to Jesse. Let's hope that Jesse gets decent fights out of this. I don't like the rumors I'm hearing, but we'll talk about those later.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Louis Ortiz versus Tony Thompson. WBA interim heavyweight champion, I guess, Louis Ortiz, the real King Kong, scored a 6-round knockout over Tony the Tiger Thompson in a non-title clash on Saturday at the D.C. Armory in Washington, D.C. He dropped Thompson in rounds 1-3 and then put him down for the count in round 6 at 229.
Well, actually, this whole heavyweight thing is confusing as hell, because the real WBA champion is Tyson Fury.
The regular champion, we'll talk about him, is Lucas Brown, and now we have a WBA interim champion.
Yeah.
Why don't you explain this to me?
Yeah. I don't get. Now look, as far as I'm concerned, the only WBA champion is Tyson Fury. Okay.
How exactly do we have three WBA heavyweight champions?
Well, look, I can see what they're doing here. They're stacking their rankings. In other words, once Fury is done with Klitschko, if that fight ever takes place, then one of his mandatories is going to be Ortiz, and then after he does that, then. You know, after he does the WBO, then his next WBA person would be Lucas Brown or whoever holds. I understand what they're doing. It's just confusing to boxing fans who don't follow it like we do on a regular basis.
It's confusing to me. You know, we follow it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the fight here for a second here.
Okay.
Tony Thompson is not a killer. You know, he's a 40-year-old guy. He's in there, you know.
44.
Yeah. 44-year-old guy. He's in there. And I give him all the credit in the world for being in there. But he was pretty much outgunned by Louis Ortiz. Everybody knew he was outgunned, and he was going to be outgunned.
Yep.
Louis Ortiz still doesn't look that impressive. What am I not seeing here?
Well, and the thing that blows me away about this is HBO went over the list of heavyweights
that this
fight was offered to, and everybody said no.
HBO
My question
was all over this guy's shorts the entire night, like he's the second coming or something. You know, they are making him out to be like this killer, and I don't know what it is. He looks to me like he has so many holes in his game that he wouldn't stand a chance against Tyson Fury, who doesn't exactly
That falls right into my point, Eric. If HBO was telling the truth and they ran through the list of heavyweights, and I don't have that list in front of me, that everybody said no. My question to all the other heavyweights that this fight was offered to, my question to you would be, why the hell did you say no? You know, I mean, come on. Tony Thompson was basically their last resort to get him a fight. And see, here's another problem. He's another Golden Boy client. And are you going to screw up Luis Ortiz? Just like you have, as it looks like, you've messed up Saddam Ali? I mean, come on. If you're going to make fights for, I'm not a promoter, but it stands to reason, Eric, if you're going to offer fights, for people to fight your clients, don't you think you have to make the checks big enough so they don't say no?
Right.
I mean, well, what am I missing here?
Yeah, $4,000 isn't going to cut it, you know. I mean, I don't know what he got paid, but
no.
Yeah, I mean, and he just looks ordinary. I mean, he looks like a big guy. Clearly he's got power, but he doesn't really exhibit a lot of boxing skill to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know what everybody else is seeing that I'm not seeing.
Well, with this WBA tournament that we're going to talk about later, what about if you put this guy in against Lucas Brown, who's another guy I don't know anything about, but I mean, heck, if you're going to give these guys belts, make fights. Let's see what these guys have to offer, because I'm not sold on Luis Ortiz yet.
No, I'm not either. And I mean, he's not really. They're putting him against Ustinov. I guess Ustinov next, a Russian guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. You know. Yeah. Let me go ahead and I'm going to break down the door to watch that. You know.
Yeah. Don't put it on HBO. I mean, like I said, I know.
They'll put it on HBO, and the HBO announcers will be all over it again. Oh my God, what a killer! You know.
Yeah.
Again, he knocked out a 44-year-old guy there, dropped him three times, and you know, maybe those other heavyweights said no because it was short notice. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
Now, who knows what the case was, or who knows? Maybe they wanted more money. Whatever the case may be.
Well, my point is to Oscar here, if people want more money, give it to them. You cannot look. The Brian Jennings performance was fantastic because I wasn't sold
great,
on.
Man. I can't knock him for that.
I wasn't sold on Brian Jennings either, so I'm actually glad that fight took place. Okay, but then step up the plate here and put him in against somebody close to that caliber of a Brian Jennings. Don't give him a 44-year-old Tony Thompson. What is the purpose of that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's not – you really didn't prove anything in that fight, and he didn't – I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, just watching him bat around that guy, you know, it's not a big deal.
And Tony has had a great career for as starting as late in boxing as he has. I mean, this guy travels all over the world. He takes fights anywhere. I mean, he's the only person up until Fury who's going to fight Klitschko again for the second time.
Just to let you know,
mm-hmm.
What a great organization the WBA is. Here are their rankings.
Okay.
Luis Ortiz, number one.
Right.
Obviously, you got Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
And number two is Lucas Brown. I'm sure that has changed since he's become the champion.
Number three,
Vladimir Klitschko. Number four, right. Shannon Briggs. He's ranked number four, son. Four. Get out of here. Get out, man. Come on. Go ahead.
I could see HBO doing that. Okay. Shannon, you want to fight? Here you go.
There you go,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. No, look. I'm. Everybody's questioning Al Haymon with some of his moves. I'm starting to question Oscar with some of his.
Yeah,
big time. So, all right. There was a fight on Showtime here. Our guy Julian J. Rock Williams versus Marcelo Matano. You want to talk about that one?
Yeah. Well, J. Rock did what he was supposed to do. Basically, dominated a guy who. Who shouldn't have been ranked in this position. You talk about organizations. The winner of this fight became the mandatory challenger, the mandatory contender for Jamal Charlo. And Julian Williams deserves that ranking, but putting him in against an Italian who did not have an impressive record, did not beat anybody of note, the guy was basically outclassed. Williams knocked him out in the seventh round. But the kid I felt sorry for on that card was Antoine Douglas. Antoine Douglas was supposed to fight Sam Solomon. But Sam Solomon got hurt in training. So with 3 weeks' notice, they pulled out some guy from the Republic of Georgia, who I've never heard of, and I can't pronounce his name, who fights a completely different style than Sam Solomon. And he basically went in and totally destroyed Anton Douglas, knocked him down several times, and got a 10th round stoppage. And you talk about a guy who, look, Al Heyman, and or I think he's with G3 Promotions. This promotion company has done a wonderful job with Douglas, but if you're preparing, you're in training camp for a guy like Sam Solomon, who is a boxer, who moves around the ring all the time. Why would you go out and recruit somebody who is a slugger, who fights a completely different style, and you don't give your fighter enough time to make the switch in training camp?
That's his management.
This, I mean, I felt so bad for the kid because I still think he's got a bright future, but he got the living daylights beat out of him on Saturday night.
Wow. Yeah, it's not good, man. Yeah. Not good. Yeah. Who do you like between Williams and Charlo?
You know what? I like both fighters, but I would have to take J-Rock.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's going to be a good fight, man. I can't wait to see it.
Yep.
Can't wait for that one.
Although with Julian Williams, now I can't blame him. I mean, he took the fight because it was for the number one spot. I still want to see him fight Austin Trout. I think he needs to fight an experienced fighter. Because let's face it, Julian Williams' opponents have not been the best quality. We actually need to see him in against an experienced pro. You know, I know he's going to get the Charlo fight first, but I still want to see him fight a guy like Austin Trout because I don't know if he's ready for that yet.
Yeah, I think, like I said, he's going to get Charlo first, and that's great. I mean, if he wants to defend against Trout, I think he can do that, but I think he definitely takes Charlo next. I mean, you're at that point now. I didn't really like that, I'll be honest, man. I was kind of lukewarm on the fight with Trout. Trout's a little bit past his prime. His best days are kind of behind him, but he's still a good fighter. But
that's right.
You know, he's not, you know, in his prime anymore, but he's still good. He's still good enough to beat you, for sure.
But I still think Austin will bring out any weaknesses that he might have.
Yeah,
and that's what I want to see. So,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
But no, you know what? I do like Julian Williams. I like the Charlo brothers too. But I think J-Rock has a brighter future, especially at 154. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so in yet another WBA Heavyweight Championship of the World fight, Lucas Brown versus Ruslan Chagaev. Unbeaten heavyweight Lucas, Big Daddy Brown, came off the canvas to score a sudden and explosive 10th round TKO to dethrone the reigning WBA regular heavyweight champion. He's just regular, yeah, Ruslan Chagaev on Saturday night in Russia. Yeah, he came off. I mean, it was, you know, he dropped Brown in the sixth round. Brown was, you know, Brown showed a lot of heart in this fight. He showed a lot of heart. And he busted him up. I guess he was busted up and everything like that. Round 10, dropped him. He dropped Chagaev in round 10. He got up and then just pummeled him, man. Then the referee stepped in, stopped the fight. So he becomes the first ever Australian heavyweight champion, sort of. It's the WBA regular title.
Not even
the WBA knows what that means.
Did you actually see this fight?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, question for you. How do you think Brown and Ortiz would look?
I would be interested to see it. I would like to see it. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I honestly think that should be the next step for both of them.
Yeah, I do too. Unfortunately, it won't be. But
no, I know.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Let's talk about another one that took place south of the border.
Happy about this.
Robbie's boy, Antonio Margarito versus Jorge Paez Jr. Margarito was knocked down, and he got put down hard. Boy, that was a rough one, but won a very close decision. This was just a brawl, man. I happened to see this fight. You know, both fighters stood in front of each other and just kind of threw bombs. It was the classic just brawlers. I mean, it could have been taking place in a phone booth. Margarito didn't look good at all in this fight. He got hit way too much. The other guy, Paez, didn't look that great either. He got hit way too much, too.
unfortunately, what this means is Antonio Margarito, the blind guy, is going to continue to fight. And,
yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't imagine it's the end for him, but it probably should be. Scores were 95-95, 95-96, I think it is, 97-93, and 96-93, all for Margarito.
Okay.
I got the 95. I have 95-95 written down, but I know that's not correct. So it's like
actually, could have been 96-94.
Yeah, maybe that was it. It was something like that. But neither one of these guys look great. Margarito especially. I mean, he got dropped hard. If he goes in there against anybody with any kind of like current top 10, he's going to get demolished.
Well, from what I'm hearing from the Latino community, they really want to see this guy get killed. They want to see him in against Canelo. That's the Spanish-speaking population for you. That's what I'm hearing.
God. They want to see him fight to death, man. Jeez. All right. Let's talk about go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't want to see another Pritchard Cologne or anything worse on my hands. No.
And you know what? I saw a picture, and I didn't realize it, but I saw a picture of Margarito prior to the fight, and it was just like at the press conference or something like that. He looks horrible. I mean, he looks awful. His eye is in horrible shape.
Oh, look, man, I'm taking from somebody who has lived with an eye condition all my life. You have to treat your eyesight like a valuable thing, because once it's gone, it ain't coming back. And I only have one eye I can see out of, and I don't know what it takes to actually get in the ring and want to sacrifice anything else that you've already lost. I mean, is getting beat up by somebody that important to you?
You know, I don't think they think it's going to happen to them. I can protect that eye, or I can do this, or I can do that. You know, I don't think they think that way. It's not even a conscious thought with them. That
you're probably
right. I think the
right,
risk is always there. I think the risk, they know the risk, but it's okay. It's not going to happen to them.
I mean, the two guys right now that shouldn't be fighting because of their eyes are Antonio Margarito and Gabriel Rosado.
Yeah.
And I could picture somebody like HBO actually putting that fight on with the two of them.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, I take eye injuries and anything with a person's eyes very seriously. So
sure.
I'm not happy about this at all.
Right. All right, let's switch gears here. Two big upsets this weekend. We're going to talk about the UFC for a little bit here, because there was two gigantic upsets here, and one happens to do with boxing and somewhat. Holly Holm, the former boxer who knocked out Ronda Rousey in her last fight, lost her title Saturday by being choked unconscious by Miesha Tate. This was a vicious choke, man. You could just see her go out. It was like her body just short-circuited. You could see her arms, almost like throwing a punch on the ground or something. You saw her, like, short-circuit. I mean, it was brutal. I was like, man. I mean, it was crazy. She was winning the fight. I think Miesha Tate probably, it was in the fifth round when it happened, so Miesha Tate was winning the fifth. It probably would have ended up a draw the way the scorecards read.
Yeah.
So it probably would have ended up a draw, but yeah, man, she ends up getting choked out. They don't choke each other in boxing.
And now she gets her third shot, I believe, at Ronda Rousey.
That's going to be the next fight. Yeah, that's going to be the next fight, is Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey.
And Rousey's already beaten her twice.
Yeah, and they've beaten them pretty soundly. I mean, and they've all been by arm bars.
Yeah.
So it'll be pretty cool to see if they come back and see if Miesha beats her this time, or see if Rousey's just got her number, man.
Yeah.
Holly Holm, incidentally, leading up to this, kind of bashed the boxing press because she says, you know, I guess they had asked her a question, and she says, you know, I appreciate all the press and everything, but where were you guys during my fighting career, boxing career? She says, you guys were nowhere to be found. Why would I want to talk to you now?
Well, unfortunately, that's the way it is now for women fighters. I mean, they literally get no coverage.
Right, right.
And, you know,
well, you can't blame us either, because they're not on TV. You know, they're not on TV. I mean, how am I going to cover you if you're not on TV?
My philosophy is, if you're good enough, put yourself on my TV so I can see you. You know?
Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, I can't report, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way it is. You know, so, yeah, so Holly Holm came out and bashed Boxing Press and says, hey, where were you guys through my career, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
we don't
Holly,
have to report on you at all because you lost. Now you're, you know,
yeah,
now you're irrelevant,
exactly,
so don't worry about it.
Exactly.
So now you ain't got nothing to worry about.
That's right.
Conor McGregor, the big upset of the weekend, moves up 25 pounds. He moved up to almost 30 pounds to fight Nate Diaz at
170. That's probably why he lost, Eric.
Yeah, right? 145. Yeah. He was at 145 and then went up to 170 to fight Nate Diaz. This didn't go that well for Conor as he suffered the same fate as Holly Holm. He was choked out by Nate Diaz in the second round. Conor, of course, had the wherewithal to tap. Conor came out blazing in the first round and really busted Diaz up in the first part of the second round. But Diaz found his groove somewhere in the second. He caught him with a straight left, with a sneaky left hand, just a sneaky little left, and caught him. And that's when that hurt him, and the tide turned, man.
That would be like asking Errol Spence or somebody like that to go from 147 to 175 to fight Sergey Kovalev.
Yeah,
I mean
it's that's one heck of a jump, man. I mean, that guy had a lot of confidence in his skills, man, that's for sure. I tell you what, man, Conor, after he was hurt, he went for a takedown, which was really a bad move. Nate Diaz is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and he trains with Cron Gracie, who's considered the best in the world, and all the Gracie family over there. Conor's not really known for his ground skill. That's all he could do is just hang on because he was going out.
I think Conor needs to go back to his normal weight class and stay there. I can't believe the UFC allowed that. We see catchweight fights in boxing all the time, but I don't think even boxing would allow somebody to gain 30 pounds to fight somebody. I mean,
you know, there's some special circumstances there. Back to the fight for a minute. As soon as Conor went to the ground, he was choked out pretty quick. Diaz got on top of him, mounted him. Conor turned over, and he sunk in his rear naked, and that was game. Now, there was some extenuating circumstance here. He was actually set to fight. Okay, Conor is 145. He was actually set to fight Rafael dos Anjos at 155. Okay? So he was going to move up in weight 10 pounds.
That
makes
that's
more sense.
Yeah.
Dos Anjos pulled out with a broken foot. So they called a couple of featherweights. They called Jose Aldo. They called Frankie Edgar. Both said no. So then they moved on, and they called Nate Diaz was the other one they called. And Nate was not in fight. He was not, training for a fight. He was not in camp. He was not anything. He was training for a triathlon, but he was at, I think he probably walks around about 180, 190, I mean, somewhere around there,
Right.
And he said he can make 165. Conor said you can make 170 and we'll have a fight, just as long as we have a fight. So I think that was pretty good. I mean, so that's why they were able to sanction that fight. That's why the fight actually came off. And Conor McGregor, who brags a lot and everything like that, was very gracious, very humble in defeat, gave Nate Diaz all the props in the world. That's how you lose a fight, I mean, he really, gave him his just due, man, for sure.
Hopefully he can go back to 155 and have the fight he was supposed to have,
Yeah, really. Or maybe they'll put Nate Diaz down to 155 and he can get that title shot instead. And Conor can go defend his belt at 145.
Well,
He looked like he gassed almost a little bit in that second round, Conor did. And I was thinking about it, he's used to fighting at 145. So his rehydrating, maybe he comes up to 160, maybe.
Yeah.
He's coming in at 168. I think he came in at 168. So he's carrying more weight than he's used to carrying.
Yeah.
He also looked a lot more beefy here than he used to look. I mean, because when you rehydrate, it's just you're putting water on. You can't put all the muscle back and everything like that. Here, you're carrying muscle and everything. That's a big difference, to carry that weight, especially when you're not used to it. I think that may have made a difference, too. So,
right.
I don't know. But so congrats to Nate Diaz, man. One of my favorites, man.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about the upcoming fight schedule. All right, this weekend.
I think the only thing we have, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is Saturday on CBS Sports Network, because remember it was they were supposed to have the fight on CBS, but since Thurman and Porter got canceled, I think that whole card is now on CBS Sports Network, and I don't even know who's left on it now. So.
Yeah. on March 11th on Telemundo, if you guys get that, Carlos Ruiz will battle Joel Montes de Oca, 10 rounds,
I'll
junior lightweights. I didn't figure you'd be watching that one. Now on Saturday, March 12th at Montreal on Fox Deportes, David Lemieux, this found a home. David Lemieux's return, he will face James De La Rosa, 10 rounds, super middleweights.
Well, that'll be a decent fight.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and also on BN Sports in Espanol at Merida, Mexico, Miguel Berchelt versus George Jupp, 12 rounds for the vacant WBO interim title, junior lightweights. Let's see, on Unimas, there's one, Casey Ramos versus Jonathan Perez, 10 rounds, lightweights. And then CBSSports.net.
Well, it's actually CBS Sports Network, Channel 221 on DirecTV.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. CBS Sports Net. Zab Judah versus Josh Torres, 10 rounds junior welterweights, and Jesus Gutierrez versus Leon Spinks III, 8 rounds.
And actually, that is going to be the boxing debut on CBS for Jim Ross. Jim Ross is going to be doing the play-by-play of that. So.
I'll be curious to see that, that's for sure.
Yeah.
At Liverpool, England, if you have Box Nation or if you want to stream it, Terry Flanagan versus Derry Matthews is a rematch, 12 rounds for Flanagan's WBO lightweight title. And from Germany, will not be televised, maybe on Box Nation or something like that, but not here. Jürgen Bremer versus Edward Gutnecht, I don't know, rematch, 12 rounds for Bremer's WBA regular.
Boy, the people in the UK are so lucky.
I tell you what, they are. This is for the WBA regular light heavyweight title. There you go.
Okay.
And that should do it. That's it for
cool.
The fights.
So good. Well, we've got fights you say that Fox card is Fox Sports Deportes. Normally when they show fights on Fox Sports Deportes, it's also on Fox Sports 1. So I wonder if that's going to be the case.
Yeah, check them both out, but yeah, that's what it's got listed. So
okay,
yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to our history lesson this week. This was one of my favorite fights, man. This is really one of my favorite fights. March 1st, 2003, Roy Jones Jr. versus John Ruiz for the heavyweight championship of the world, the WBA, who's dominated the conversation thus far in the podcast. Heavyweight championship of the world.
And I think this was the last real significant good fight of Roy Jones's career.
I do, too. You know, this was one where, you know, when he took the fight, you're like, man, this guy came up from middleweight, and he's coming up from light heavyweight, skips cruiserweight and goes to heavyweight, which, you know, it happens, you know. But you're thinking to yourself, can he really handle that guy? I mean,
well, actually, Roy came in weighing at 193. Eric, you know, he basically was cruiserweight.
Well, rumor has it he had weights in his pocket when he weighed in.
Yeah,
that he had 2 pound weights in his pocket.
Yeah,
to make him look heavier.
Yeah. But John Ruiz is somebody I never was really impressed with.
No.
I know he upset somebody to get that title, but as soon as he got it, I thought, okay, this is a title that somebody's going to come and take. And sure enough, Roy decided to go take it.
A very interesting fight, man. Prior to the build up and stuff, you're like, you know, I think he's just might be too big for him. You know, didn't turn out to be the case. In 2002, Roy Jones Jr. was the undisputed light heavyweight champion. He had also held a title in the middleweight and super middleweight divisions. He was considered the best pound-for-pound fighter out there. Not only that, but he was largely considered unbeatable. You know, Roy Jones agreed to move up in weight to heavyweight to face WBA heavyweight champion John Ruiz for his title. Jones was pretty much also considered unbeaten. He was 47-1, and his one loss was to Montel Griffin. That was a disqualification. So, by and large, he was unbeaten. I mean, that was a fight he was winning. And he came back and faced Montel and knocked him out in the first round. So,
absolutely.
I mean, by all accounts, this guy's 48-0. Yeah. You know, I mean, nobody's beaten this guy. And not only is he just, he's decisioning people, he's knocking people out. He's stopping fights. He's putting it on people, you know.
Roy Jones back in the day was more like Sergey Kovalev, Golovkin, you know, I mean.
He was putting people away, man.
Basically, nobody wanted to fight the dude.
No.
You know.
And his speed, I mean, you just couldn't keep up with it.
Right.
He had superhuman speed, man. Ruiz's promoter, Don King, spent much of 2002 negotiating with Jones to try to get him to come up and challenge John Ruiz. Eventually, Jones accepted the offer that guaranteed him $10 million. Ruiz, however, this is where it gets dicey. Ruiz received no guaranteed money and instead agreed to take a share of the pay-per-view profits. This led to some bad blood between the two sides as Ruiz accused Jones of underpromoting the fight, which, you know, I mean, you know, to not take any guaranteed money and just get a pay, you know, the pay-per-view profits, man, that's a really risky endeavor right there, man.
Can you refresh my memory? Who did John Ruiz beat to get that title?
I think it was Holyfield.
Okay, that's right. That's Holyfield. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right.
At the end of the day, John Ruiz and Don King needed Roy Jones in this fight. John Ruiz, you know, and we talk about this, is one of the worst fighters to watch because of his grab-and-go style.
Oh, my God.
He would throw
God.
A couple of punches and tie you up. Mm-hmm. And then the referee would break you. He would throw a couple punches. That was the fight. It was grab-and-go. Grab, you know, throw a punch, grab. Throw a punch, grab. You know, he was not a crowd-friendly fighter.
And
you know,
with Roy's boxing movement and stuff like that, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way this guy's going to grab onto Roy, you know.
Despite giving up a lot of height and weight to Ruiz, Jones dominated most of the fight. Jones used his superior boxing skills and hand speeds to his advantage and used jabs and uppercuts against Ruiz, who was unable to land a sustained amount of offense, only connecting with 89 of 433 punches thrown.
That sounds like the Tyson Fury who only landed 86 against Vladimir Klitschko.
Right, 21% of his shots, you know.
Yeah.
The one thing that I really noticed in this fight is that the referee would not allow that clinch style that Ruiz used. He did a good job of making sure Ruiz was not going to clinch. And they were admonishing him every time he did that. Official scorecards went the distance, no knockdowns, anything like that. It was pretty one-sided. The official scorecards were 118 to 110, 117, 111, and 116, 112, all in favor of Roy Jones Jr., and made him only the second light heavyweight boxer in history to move up and win a major title in his first fight in the heavyweight division. Michael Spinks, of course, was the first to do so.
And then after that, Roy went back down to 175 and was never the same, because then he had the two fights with Antonio Tarver, and, you know, went on from there, and Roy has never been the same since. This was his last significant prize fight.
And I agree with that. I mean, to me, this fight was historic because of Roy Jones starting, you know, not because of what he accomplished in capturing the heavyweight title, starting at middleweight and capturing the heavyweight championship.
Right.
It's also historic because I don't believe that Roy Jones was ever the same after this fight.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Eric.
He went back down to light heavyweight and had a hard time with Tarver. Then was eventually KO'd by Tarver in their second fight, and then he went
that was the classic clip. I'll never forget it. During the fight instructions, Antonio says, "Any excuses tonight, Roy?"
Right.
You know. So you know, I mean, no, Roy has never been the same. I mean, congratulations to him. I mean, he accomplished something that only two people have done. But I think it cost him in the end, you know?
I think it did, too. I think that weight cut to get down to 175 really bothered him again, you know, because he put on solid muscle. I mean, he wasn't heavy. He put on solid muscle to get up to, you know, 198 for that fight or 196 or whatever he was weighing. I mean, who knows what he was actually weighing. He put on solid muscle, and to lose that over a period,
I know it's hard to turn down $10 million, but you know,
$10 million in history.
Yeah,
I mean, think about it. I mean, how many people hold the WWE? You know, how many people hold the championship of the world?
Yeah, and you know? But it basically cost Roy, the rest of his career, because he could have, if he would not have taken this fight, who knows how long he would have dominated the light heavyweight division.
Yeah, but you know what? Roy wasn't, he wasn't exactly, he was being criticized really, you know, in his career too for not fighting the, you know, who was the German guy he was supposed to fight? I can't remember his name. Mikulchewski, Darius Mikulchewski.
Yeah, that's it.
He didn't want to go to Germany to fight him. He didn't want to fight him. I mean, it was a mess. I mean, and that guy was the only guy. I think he was undefeated as well. He was, you know, and Roy probably would have steamrolled that guy.
Right.
And so Roy was pretty much looked at as not taking a lot of chances out there with his opposition. So when he moved up to fight Ruiz, that was a big deal. That was a big. That was like, wow. He's this is a chance, man. This is a real chance. This is not a gimmick.
And you know, it's ironic because now, now Roy's at the stage of his career. He goes anywhere to fight. Back then he didn't want to go anywhere. Now he goes everywhere.
That's what you find ironic about the whole thing is now he's willing to travel, whereas before, you know, it's tough, man. It's tough watching him like that.
Yep.
So that's our history lesson for this week. Let's move on to our news and rumors.
Okay.
The WBA, this is a completely ridiculous sanctioning body. The WBA is holding a heavyweight tournament that absolutely nobody knows about, except the idiots at the WBA. They have a bracket and everything. Tyson Fury is on one side of the bracket, Lucas Brown on the other side. The goal is to get rid of the WBA regular title. Why don't you just have Brown fight Fury? Case closed. End of story.
Actually, I think you need to have Brown fight Ortiz and then the winner fight Fury.
It doesn't matter. Louis Ortiz, Frezo Kendo is still in there.
Oh, my God.
Louis Ortiz, Frezo Kendo, Alexander Ustinov, all of these fighters are in the tournament. This is just completely ridiculous. First of all, they have no power to make these fights happen, especially the non-title fights. They're all non-titles because the titles don't exist. There's no regular champion. There's no interim champion. There's just one champion. That's Tyson Fury.
Yeah.
Like him or not, he's the champ. You know, he beat the man who beat the man.
He's got a legal obligation with a rematch, and so he cannot take any other fights until he takes care of the rematch clause.
Right.
Simple.
So they're saying that WBA is saying that Klitschko is going to fight Fury. Underneath that, you have Louis Ortiz. He's going to fight Ustinov. Lucas Brown has already had his fight, so it looks like he'll fight Frezo Kendo next.
Right? Oh, God.
Frezo Kendo somehow got a first round bye in all this. It's just completely ridiculous. I hate it. I hate the WBA.
Yeah. Well, I think all sanctioning bodies, if they could do this, they will.
Morons. Just complete morons. Yeah, let's have 15 titles, all heavyweight champions. Why not just give them away? You know, just pick up a belt on eBay for what they're giving away.
Hell, look on eBay and see what you can get, you know?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know? Billy Joe Saunders will defend his title April 23rd. And this fight is about to go down. Billy Joe Saunders will defend against Max Bursack.
I don't even know who that is.
That makes two of us, buddy, and we follow this pretty close.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he
turned down millions for Triple G.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, that's the same day Triple G fighting, by the way.
Yeah, right? So it wasn't a calendar issue.
Yeah.
You know? So, so Max Bursack. All right. You're going to get about 50 grand for that fight, and there you go. And then that'll be all eaten up in the sanctioning fees. So, there it is.
There you go.
Way to go, Billy. You're right. Lucas Matisse may be retiring. Former WBC interim world champion Lucas Matisse posted on social media that he feels tired or unmotivated and questions his desire to continue boxing. Matisse better buck up because Matisse is supposed to be preparing for his next fight on May 7th in the United States against the dreaded TBA. So I don't know, man. I don't know if this guy's coming back, man. If he feels unmotivated, he probably shouldn't come back.
I'm hearing that TBA could very well be Provodnikov.
I'm hearing Terrence Crawford and Provodnikov.
Terrence would tear him apart. At least with Provodnikov, it might be a competitive fight, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to see that either.
Well, I don't either, but they've got to make the Canelo pay-per-view more interesting, although I think the main event pretty much sells itself.
Yeah, I agree. But they got to put somebody on the undercard. Nobody's going to
know. Yeah.
Bob Arum has went on record stating that he wants Jesse Vargas to fight the winner of Bradley and Pacquiao.
Well, Bob, you're an idiot.
Seriously? That's who you want him to fight? Really?
Bob, you're an idiot. And he had major issues with Timothy Bradley. Say Bradley wins that fight, which, you know, I don't know if he will because Pacquiao dominated him twice.
Fight? Yeah, I mean, who cares? You know, fight's insignificant.
The point is, why do you want to? Let's go on the assumption that Bradley somehow wins this. What the hell purpose is there to put Bradley and Vargas back together? I've already watched that fight. I don't want to see it again.
No.
And what would be the look? Bob doesn't want to face the reality that Manny Pacquiao is going to retire because he said it multiple times. If he wins his election, his political duties are going to take priority. He's not going to have time for training. People, you need to face the fact. This probably is the last time that we'll ever see Manny Pacquiao in a boxing ring.
Well, and who cares? I mean, honestly, yeah. Who cares if we see him again or we don't see him again? You know, he's fighting Tim Bradley for the third time. It's not exactly like he's, you know, fighting, you know, I don't know. I mean, you've already beat Bradley twice. Why are you fighting him again? Nobody wants to see this nonsense.
Yeah, let's continue our fantasy world here. Let's say Pacquiao wins. What can Jesse Vargas do to Manny Pacquiao that Manny Pacquiao hasn't seen? And do you think, look, Jesse Vargas may win that fight just because of him being so much younger than Pacquiao? Who
right.
knows? But
totally,
why the hell do you want to do that? I mean, promoters.
I mean,
wouldn't you
want to see Pacquiao Mayweather again? You know what I mean? Nobody wants to see him fight. It's done. It's over. You're done. It's over.
Let the guy fight Tim Bradley and let him walk away.
Right. Right.
You
now,
know,
Bob Arum did have a pretty good idea. He said he would willing to work with Al Haymon to make Terrence Crawford versus Adrian Broner or Jesse Vargas versus Danny Garcia. I think those are two dynamite fights.
Okay, I think Garcia would kill Vargas. I don't think Jesse's ready for Danny.
Oh no, man. He looked pretty good. He looked pretty good. I don't know.
Yeah.
Man. He looked pretty good.
And I would love to see Broner and Crawford.
Yeah, I would too. I'm sure Broner wants to see that, but I think I would like to see it, you know.
Bob, you need to take care of your lawsuit because Al's not going to pick up the phone.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. All right, let's move on to our train wreck of the week, my favorite segment. This is one, this is different, that's for sure. Former world champion Jorge Arce found himself in some hot water this weekend when he apparently tried to solicit sex from a worker at Embassy Suites Hotel.
I'm
at Embassy Suites, that's what I always do, you know?
Now, wait a minute. Was this from a regular hotel worker?
This
somebody
is from
that
a
already
hotel
worked?
Worker, yeah. So,
okay.
You know, either she had a front desk or he or she, I'm not judging, I don't know.
Okay.
Had
all
a uniform on that said, you know, Embassy Suites, or maybe a maid had a uniform that says Embassy Suites. Either way,
yeah,
you knew
right.
she worked at Embassy Suites.
Okay.
Do you ever go to a hotel and think about that? Do you ever, like, go to a hotel and think, you know, I think I might pay for sex here with one of the workers. I think they might be down for that. Because maybe these maids don't make a lot of money. They just work on tips. I think that I'm going to pay for some sex tonight. What do you?
When most people go into a motel or a hotel or whatever, they're on vacation, they're traveling, and 9 times out of 10, unless you're traveling on business, you normally have somebody with you, so that's normally not a problem.
Sure.
I don't get it here. You know, I've heard of looking for sex in all kinds of places, but I've never heard of, well, gee, I'm going to check into this hotel. Oh, by the way, I'm going to pick up some sex while I'm here.
Like he's going to the vending machine, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get some coke and some sex, and I'll be back in a minute, you know. Let me ask you this, was there some culpability on the hotel worker for, you know, any kind of customer service or anything like that? I mean, should she have just given in for, you know, how does this work?
No, number one, we don't know what kind of conversation these two had.
It's very true. Very true.
I mean, she could have been flirting with him for all we know.
Sure.
But I honestly think that, you know, this is just a mistake on all parties.
You know, I tell you what, and it's true. We don't know what kind of conversation he had, because if she was flirting with him, then all bets are off. Because I know, like, when a girl's flirting with me, the first thing I do is throw down, like, $50 and say, okay, well, let's go backstairs. You know, let's go to the back or something like that, you know? I mean, I could sense a vibe here. What do you think, you know?
Eric, come on. You didn't meet Lisa that way, I'm sure. You know.
Lisa's a special case, though. You know?
Okay.
So, this is just like, we can have so much fun with this. He spent a few days in Orange County Jail. Go figure. Usually that's what happens when you're soliciting sex from a regular worker, you know. Yeah, California, Orange County. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, my God. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, he's been released on $25,000 bail, which I believe was probably less than he offered the girl to have sex with him. And he pleads not guilty. He says that he didn't solicit sex. Of course he didn't solicit sex, buddy. Yeah, of course not. Yeah.
Well, I wonder how they caught him. I wonder if the hotel called the cops or whether the girl called the cops, because they had to have evidence to arrest him under. I'm curious about that.
I'm curious as to why he had to pay for it. I mean, like, you know, why don't just bring your belt around? He's a former world champion. He's got a belt. Why not just bring your belt everywhere you go if you're looking for that, you know? Just wear it around your shoulder or something like that. Oh, this old thing? Yeah, this is, I got this back in the day, you know? My name's Jorge, you know?
Wow. Unbelievable.
So, we'll see what happens there. But he says he's innocent. Apparently, you know, yeah, it's probably just a language thing, you know, no habla. You know, I didn't understand, you know. Things got all foul. I was asking her where the bathroom was. Things got all messed up, and, you know, maybe she misinterpreted some things, you know.
Come on, buddy. The bathroom is in your room. Give me a break.
You know, since you're making my bed, you know, I mean, how does that conversation work? You know, I don't understand it. How does that conversation work? Even if she's flirting with you, or something like that, how do you go from there to just, here's $50 or here's $100. I'm going to give you $200 to stay over tonight.
Well, like I said, without knowing both sides of the conversations, it's kind of hard to judge.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right.
But hell, we've got two big sex cases in the news already. We got the whole Aaron Andrews case going. I mean, the jury's deliberating as we speak.
Yeah.
With that whole mess. And then today, the Hulk Hogan sex tape trial started.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I heard about a $100 million lawsuit or something like that against Gawker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got two major sex things going on here. So
guaranteed. I guarantee that Hulk Hogan thing is going to settle out of court for less than $100 million, but I guarantee he's going to pay for it.
And I'm really surprised the whole Aaron Andrews thing is actually went to the jury. I have a real good feeling that she might actually walk away with lots of money here.
You think? Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's going to walk away with a whole lot of money. And then hopefully she leaves ESPN and just gets out of my life.
Well, actually, she's with Fox now, Eric.
I don't care where she is. Just get out of here. All right.
Yeah.
Hopefully she won't be on my TV anytime soon.
She won't be on your TV unless you watch Dancing with the Stars. She's one of the hosts.
Yeah, good. Get her out of here. I don't watch that show.
But heck, with $75 million, she can do whatever she wants.
Yeah. All right, so let's move back to boxing here.
Okay.
Carl Frampton. I always want to say Peter Frampton, like the singer.
Well, because, Frampton comes alive, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
The Jackal. Carl Frampton could be dropping the WBA title. The WBA has mandated that Carl Frampton face mandatory challenger Guillermo Rigondeaux. Mr. Excitement Guillermo Rigondeaux. Rumor has it that Carl Frampton is just going to vacate the title rather than face Rigo.
Nobody is interested in fighting that guy, man. Eric, we covered this a couple of weeks ago. We said this was a possibility.
Yeah.
Because, remember, he's got two mandatories. Rigondeaux with the WBA. Boy, the WBA is the sponsor of our show this week.
Right.
And then he's got another mandatory with the IBF.
Yeah, like I said, man, nobody's interested in fighting Rigo. Santa Cruz isn't interested. I don't think Quigg is going to be interested. I don't think, you know, obviously Frampton isn't interested. Nobody's interested. And, the reason being, as they said, he's just not an exciting fighter. I mean, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that you're not going to beat him. But, you know, he's not going to sell a lot of tickets either. Nobody's going to want to watch that. So
no, and we heard the rumor that he's going to be on a UK undercard.
Yeah.
And we know how seriously the UK takes boxing. If he fights an undercard fight in the UK and he gets booed out of the arena, and he's as boring as he's been over here in the States, man, that doesn't say much for you and your boxing career.
Yeah, what Rigo's got to do is just put his nose to the grindstone and just keep fighting. That's all he has to do is just keep fighting. Stop looking for big fights or whatever. They'll come. You know, you get all the belts. You get all the, you know, you keep winning. They can't avoid you forever, you know, so I don't know.
Well, if Frampton drops the belt, and obviously Ringing Yao is the number one, who would be number two? Because that's who would have to fight Rigo.
Let's see here. Let's see if I can find out here.
Let's see how an interesting fight is, or whether it's somebody we've never heard of.
All right, and it's, let's see here, Moises Flores.
Okay, yeah, it's somebody we've never heard of.
Right, there you go. That'll be on pay-per-view, yeah.
Yeah, and that's really going to make a lot of money for you, Rigo.
Oh, good night, man.
You know what, I don't look, I think Carl could beat Rigo or be competitive with it. Well, I don't know if he could beat Rigo, but I think he could be competitive. But frankly, I can't blame him.
No,
you know?
Me either. Too much risk and not enough reward.
Right.
Yeah. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Apparently left in the middle of his training camp. Chavez Sr. came out and said he's worried about his son's lack of discipline and that he may be headed down a rocky road.
And he also said in the same interview, Eric, that he basically washes his hands of his own son because he doesn't want to take his boxing career seriously.
Yeah, Chavez Sr. is quoted as saying, "I don't know what happened. I'm extremely disappointed, sad, and very worried about his indiscipline." He said, "Really, he was training very hard at Big Bear, and all of a sudden he left. He came down." He says, "I don't think he left to do good things. That worries and stresses me." Chavez Sr. said. Chavez Jr. of course, had a response. He said, "I don't know what happened." He said, "I don't know why he said that." He said, "I came down from Big Bear to Los Angeles to check on my heel." He said he went to a heel doctor in L.A. He said, and later went and ran in Santa Monica. He said, "I took the time to see my daughter, and I'm returning to do some sparring because my heel feels better," said Chavez Jr. Maybe he got mad because I don't do the way he likes to do them. He said, "I respect him. He's my father, but, you know, I'm 30 years old." Yeah.
Well, and I feel bad for Robert Garcia because I heard he actually left his gym. He left all the other fighters that he's training and went up to Big Bear to exclusively work for him. And then he ups and leaves and gives no explanation, leaves him high and dry.
I think it'll be interesting when his drug test comes out, that's for sure. You know, because that's what is happening here, I think. You know, that's what Chavez Sr. here seems to be alluding to.
Yeah.
Chavez Jr. has had some issues in the past with that, with substance and everything like that. And he just takes off. So let me understand this. Let me get your story correct, Junior. So you just leave training camp. Don't tell anybody and just left training camp to go to get your heel looked at. That, I mean, apparently nobody really knew was an issue because they would have took you to the doctor anyway. You know what I mean? So he just ups and leaves and goes to a heel doctor and then went and ran in Santa Monica and then took the time to see his daughter and everything like that. Come on, that story doesn't make a bit of sense.
No, and like I said, I feel bad for Robert Garcia because he left a gym full of fighters to go work for this guy up in Big Bear to get him in shape. Because remember, I think it's in April. I'm not sure what the date is, but he's going to be fighting Jack the Ripper here.
Badu Jack is no joke, man. Jack is no friend of the show, Badu Jack. You know, he's no joke, man. And that fight's scheduled for April 30, man. I tell you what, he better get his head out of his culo and get back to training, man. I tell you that, because this isn't good, man. A lot of turmoil here.
I'm already favoring Jack the Ripper because that's what he is, man.
Jack the Ripper, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, by far, man.
Yeah. No, but if I'm any other major trainer, whenever Chavez rings my phone or knocks on my gym door, I say no, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna mess with you.
Exactly, man. Adrian Broner and Floyd Mayweather are at odds here. The upcoming Broner and Theophane fight has Broner at odds with Mayweather and the money team. Broner was quoted at the press conference saying, "I respect Floyd, but at the end of the day, they are not on my blank side." Broner said while continuing to pay his respect to Mayweather, "But I have got to say, F those guys. Right now, they're coming to dethrone me. I can't go into a fight like that like they are my friends. Right now, they are my enemies, and that is what it is. So, hell yeah, I'm going to beat the F out of Ashley."
Well, this fight is scheduled for the perfect day. You couldn't have picked a better day for this.
Yeah, right? I mean,
April 1st.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know.
April Fools. Floyd Money Mayweather obviously responded. He said, "Adrian Broner got up there and said, FTMT. We are a company that's making millions. But remember, Adrian Broner lost to Marcos Maidana. I was the first one there and had his back and a shoulder for him to cry on when everyone else turned their back on him." Mayweather, who talked about Broner's comments, basically said it was immature, you know. Ultimately, he said, "Am I going to bash Adrian Broner and say something bad about him? Absolutely not. I'm not going to do that. I used to say things when I was younger, but I'm almost 40 now, and I look at things totally different. I'm not going to carry myself in a childish way." Since when? You know, since when are you not going to carry yourself in a childish way, Floyd? You know, but I thought he had the right, you know, honestly, I thought Mayweather had the right response. And he's absolutely right. When Broner lost to Maidana, he was the first one that said, you know, hey, he'll be back. It's just a setback. True champions get up. And, I mean, he was really on his side for a lot of this, you know. I don't know what's going through Broner's head. Who knows?
Well, let's put Broner in with the baddest man from Nebraska, and
the
let's see what
illest man in Nebraska, Terrence Crawford. Yeah.
Let's see what Adrian does with a guy like that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Squat. I'll tell you that. Tyson Fury took a shot at UFC star Conor McGregor for his loss this weekend. Fury took to Twitter to say both top UFC stars lost this weekend, and Holly Holm showed more balls than Conor McGregor. The fighting pride of Ireland would have not tapped so easy. I would have went to sleep first. He said, "I'd pass out before I tap out." Come on, man. Tyson Fury is an idiot.
Well, Tyson, why don't you back up your words within your actions? Why don't you talk to Nick or Diaz and see if you're willing to take what he has to deliver?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you go fight Nate Diaz and see what happens,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there you
Nate
go.
Nate Diaz is, what, 170 pounds? And
that's right.
Get out of here. He killed Tyson Fury. Those leg kicks alone, boy.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781 and listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. And I'm at Ringside 73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.